Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and open up the Senate Committee on Judiciary. We have a number of things that are on our agenda today. First one is going to be a work session on 9:45. So I'll open up the work session, Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 945 has a dash 8 amendment. This is the ballot measure 49 bill that we've had on the agenda several times, and we have the fiscal and the revenue on the dash 8, and so it's ready to move.
All right, so what we need to do is have a motion on the dash 8s.
Move the dash 8 into SB 945.
Senator Boquist moves the dash 8s in the Senate Bill 945. Is there any discussion?
Is somebody going to explain what the difference is between the dash 8 and the dash 6, which is the last one that we had, because we just got these?
We have Jenny Gustafson from the Department of Justice and Richard Whitman in the audience, and they're here for questions if you'd like to ask.
Richard, why don't you come on up, and Jenny, if you want to come with them. Me with little faith.
Why we have yet another Senate.
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Chair Pazansky, Senator Bonamici. For the record, Richard Whitman, the Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and I have with me Virginia Gustafson from the Oregon Department of Justice, who worked on the Dash 8 amendments. So
let me just see. My understanding is the Dash 8s was some technical fixes, so just language that just wasn't, let's say, stating what was intended.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The differences between the Dash 6 and the Dash 8s are not substantive. They were technical amendments to make sure that the sections worked as intended under the Dash 6 amendments and would actually provide the relief that was intended to claimants. Jenny, do you have anything to add?
The intent was to
put your name on the record, Virginia.
Virginia Gustafson, Department of Justice. The intent of the Dash 8s was primarily to clean up some of the language from the Dash 6 and make it clear as to who was entitled to relief under primarily Sections 2 and 3. And then there was one change, a new Section 7 was created, but what that really was is moving one provision of Section, I'm believing it's Section 3, regarding vested rights to a separate section because it applied to all claimants under Measure 49 and not just the claimants who had initially vested rights when they first filed an election under 5-3.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions, comments? All right. And so we have a motion. Is there any other any objection to the motion of adopting the Dash 8s in the Senate Bill 945? So ordered.
I just a question. I'm assuming the fiscal matches the Dash 8, and there's no referral because it says it's $749,000 less. Am I right, or is there a referral?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
Is there a referral?
There is not. The committee, if they want to, may add a subsequent referral.
It says it's $750,000 less. That's my reading of it. No, I just look at fiscal says it's $749,511 less than what was in the governor's budget, so that's why I just asked that question. Are we ready to move it?
I'm ready to move it. I guess at this point there was no need for it to go to Ways and Means. That's the question.
I believe the president's office may make that decision, but that the committee doesn't need to talk about it unless you so choose to request a subsequent referral.
All right, why don't we just move it?
We'll just move it. Mr. Chair, I move SB 945 with a dash 8 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 945 as amended with the dash 8s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair will carry this one, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 945. And at this point, Council, why don't you tell me the order that we should be pursuing the rest of the stuff for today?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can tell you that I have all the paperwork on Senate Bill 759. I have all the paperwork on Senate Bill 389, 759 is for hearing and possible work session. Senate Bill 389 is for a work session. But you have the most witnesses in Senate Bill 618.
All right. What we're going to do, let's see. Senator Starr, you're here on which one? 759. I think what I'm going to do is go ahead and open it up and let's see if there's any other members here. Nancy, you're here on which one? Someone? Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and have y'all two come up. Let me take your testimony, and we'll see if we continue on this. I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 759.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 759 comes here from Senator Starr and Representative Nathanson, allows a public safety coordinating council to conduct business pursuant to a vote of the majority of the quorum present rather than the majority of the vote of the members of the council.
Good morning, and whoever would like to start.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Bruce Starr, State Senator from Senate District 15. I have the privilege of representing Hillsborough, Forest Grove, Cornelius, North Plains in the Oregon Senate. 759 is before you today. It's been in the works for almost a year, and I want to thank Representative Nathanson for joining me in co-sponsoring this, this bill. A group of frustrated citizens on the Washington County Public Safety Coordinating Council came to me and asked me to help them fix a small problem in state law. As you may know, these groups are sometimes called lip syncs because it generally stands for local public safety coordinating councils. Most counties have these councils. They were created in Senate Bill 1145 during the 1995 special session as a way to help coordinate policies set by those of us at the state level with implementation going on at the local level. Along the way, PSCCs were allowed to merge with local criminal justice advisory councils appointed by the presiding judge. So that adds another layer of difficulty to this. In my county, we have a very dedicated group of folks involved in criminal justice and social services, along with a half a dozen lay citizens. They're responsible for making recommendations to the local board of county commissioners. Sometimes they can't act because of a procedural problem involving quorum laws. I will let Dennis Griffiths, he's a retired local attorney and member of the Washington County Public Safety Coordinating Council, address the specific problem. Dennis was appointed to chair a special subcommittee to deal with this issue. In addition, Dawn Phillips is here. She's a member of my staff. She's been on the PSCC in Washington County for nearly 7 years and has worked with legislative council to work on this bill. Simply, though, this bill basically allows for PSCC to do business with a majority of a quorum rather than a majority of the total council. It's a simple bill. It's a one-sentence fixed in the statute. There's folks, again, behind me that will testify to the specifics in Washington County, but that's the crux of the problem. I'd urge your rapid agreement and movement of this bill. With that, I'd let Representative Nathanson make a few remarks.
Nancy.
Thank you. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from House District 13. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm here in a supportive role. I sponsored a bill in the 2007 session to help improve the effectiveness of LPSCs, Local Public Safety Coordinating Councils. So I want to say just a few words why I think they are so important and why I think it's imperative that we do everything we can to help them live up to their potential. As you're aware, public safety is the third largest expense for the state behind education and human services. In the criminal justice system, there are parallel and overlapping layers of government, and the activities of each can directly impact the other, whether it's city police, sheriffs, jails, parole and probation, district attorneys, judges, public defenders. LPSCs are the place where these groups come together to figure out how to do their work more effectively. Lawmakers thought it was so important to get the criminal justice system components working together. But in the 1970s, they codified this and set up the legislation to enable these coordinating councils and, in fact, give them direction. Collaboration can lead to improved effectiveness as well as saving money. These public safety coordinating councils were established with the task of helping to organize and coordinate activities among the public safety system, but also in many areas it includes elements of the human services delivery system because of the great connections and important connections between public safety and human services. In some counties, these LPSCs are working just great. They meet regularly. They come up with ideas for changes, improvements, streamlining. Sometimes it's to save money, sometimes it's for better results. In other places, it's still not working as great. There's still a way to go to live up to their potential. From what I understand, even though there has been some improvement, there's been some new activity in the last 2 years, there are still places where a LPSC can go dormant, where vacancies are left unfilled, or where they simply don't meet, and if they don't meet, then they can't meet the direction that the legislature established. So I'm very pleased to be able to help support and sponsor this bill, which I think is just one more, as the Senator pointed out, a pretty simple step in enabling them to get their work done.
All right, thank you. Is there any questions or comments for the reference senator? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
I'll go ahead and call up the other two witnesses that are signed up for this, Dennis Griffith and Don Phillips. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 759?
Mr. Chair, Senators, I'm Dennis Griffiths, a resident of Forest Grove, Washington County. I've been on the LPSCC up there for a little over 3 years now. My testimony will be supplemental to what you're receiving in consideration of your time. I'm not going to read what you already have before you.
Thank you.
What I'm testifying here today is based on firsthand experience at the PSCC up in Washington County. The PSCC does not have the authority itself to come and ask for a change in the law, but because of Ms. Phillips' time there, the interest of Senator Starr and others, they have recognized that there is some difficulty. The people on the PSCC up there have varied backgrounds, very diverse, and various interests. And as you know from all your own personal experiences, this kind of diversity and all is necessary to create lively discussion to come up with the best results to cause everybody to rethink and back up their positions. I found in my experience up in Washington County as chair of the Hillsborough Chamber and chair of the Air Show and chairing some other civic organizations up there that dissent really does help you get really great results, and that if your organization is one that everything is just passed unanimously all the time, that's really not getting the best result. This brings us back to the issue that we have here. Our coordinating council in Washington County, because of the size of the county, is pretty large. We have approximately 25 members, and even if you are able to get a quorum, because these people are all very, very busy. When you have the sheriff from the DA and the chairman of the board up there and other people that are directors of agencies, their calendars are so crowded that it's really hard to get them all in the same room at the same time. And if you have just a bare quorum, well, the chair can't vote, so you still can't pass anything because it would take every single person in the room to pass it. It's a bit of an oddity. There is a statute in your exhibits that requires that not just a majority of the members present, even if you have a quorum, to pass something. It requires a majority of every single person that's been appointed to that council to pass something. And therefore, the mandated mission of the PSCC is often thwarted by that statute that requires a majority of all the people who have been appointed to that council to vote positively to pass a recommendation on to the County Board of Commissioners. So we ask you to consider passage of the Senate Bill 759 to enable us to better fulfill our missions. Thank you.
Thank you. Don?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Don Phillips,
State Senator Bruce Starr's staff, and also a long-term member of the Washington County PSCC. And as Dennis mentioned, we can't speak for the PSCC in Washington County, but as members and our experience there and the frustration of having to make sure we've got 12 voting members in the room before we can take action on anything. We have 23 voting members on the body, and we have to have a majority there for a quorum and a majority voting yes before we can move anything forward. And by statute, there are several documents that we're required to sign off on every year. One of them, for example, is the Community Corrections Plan for the county. And so by state law, there are certain mandates that we have to follow to help our county meet those state laws. And so it does help in our official capacity and in our unofficial capacity, making recommendations on local levies and other things. We didn't just come to you because we had no other answers. We tried changing our bylaws. We couldn't do that. We talked to the county council's office. That didn't work. We had some legislators talk to legislative council for us, and they all pointed us back to the need to change state law. So we come to you out of frustration and hope that you can make this simple change and allow our PSCC and others around the state to be able to move forward with the business in front of them with a majority of the quorum that's present for any given meeting. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any questions? Any comments? Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
My understanding, Council, this bill is ready to move forward. We have a motion.
Chair, members of the committee, yes. I just got the fiscal impact statement. It's no fiscal impact.
All right.
And we have no revenue impact statement. So we're ready to go, Mr. Chair. No amendments.
All right.
Work session.
Yeah. Oh. Close the public hearing. Open work session on Senate Bill 759. Thank
yes,
you.
Mr. Chair, I'll move 759 to the floor with a due pass.
Senate Bill request moves Senate Bill 759 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm sure Senator Starr will love to carry this.
Oh, absolutely, he will. Any objection? So ordered, and Senator Starr will be our carrier. And with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 759. I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 618.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 618, exemption disclosure public records pertaining to an individual's discharge or other separation from military services. The chair, members of the committee, it comes to you from Senator George M. Winters.
All right. We have a number of people who want to give testimony today. I do want to put on the record that we do have some amendments that are going to be considered due to the timing of when the amendments came in. If we do adopt those amendments, and I understand it would probably be best to move the bill with an amendment versus as it was currently written, and originally written, I should say. We will not be able to do that today because we need to get the fiscal and the revenue statement on that amendment. So the goal at this point will be to take the testimony and decide on whether or not we want to include an amendment. We'll get testimony and some information on those. And then if we're so inclined, amend the bill and then get the fiscal. So with that, I'm going to, let's see, I'm looking to see who is on the list. Why don't we have Randall Frankie and Jim Willis and General Caldwell come forward. Get started.
Okay.
Good morning,
Chair Prozanski, Senators. My name is Randy Frankie. I'm a former Marion County Commissioner, but I'm here this morning as a citizen and a veteran. This issue was brought to my attention back in late 2007, the issue regarding the security of veterans' personal information contained under discharge papers, or DD-214s, I think is they're more better known as. And as the time I started doing research, I recognized there was a problem because identity theft is the fastest growing crime in America today, and DD-214s have your first, middle, last name, social security numbers, driver's license, address at discharge, plus a great deal of other personal information on there that can easily be used for identity theft if someone accesses that. And there, when I first became aware of this, I talked to Jim Willis, I talked to a member of the County Veteran Service Officers Association, folks at AOC, Association of Oregon Counties, and there seemed to be some confusion and I guess disagreement on whether your effort in the session, it was Senate Bill, 587, I think it's ORS 6468.600, adequately covered DD-214s on file in the clerk's office. So when Senator Winters heard of this issue, she had what is now Senate Bill 618 drafted on my behalf, and Senator George joined in as well because the original person who brought to my attention is from the city of Kaiser and Senator George's district. And by the way, both of those senators send their apologies. Both had hoped to be here this morning, but they each of their offices contacted me last week to indicate that they had conflicts, unfortunately, this morning, could not be here, didn't want the hearing to be delayed, obviously, so I assured them that I would be here and at least speak to the origination of the bill and the importance of it. The bill itself is really a relatively simple amendment to ORS 192.502, adding military discharge records to the list of documents except from public disclosure, again, for the purpose of protecting veterans from having their identity stolen by someone who might get a hold of this. I would just point out that in my testimony I handed you, the testimony is pretty brief. I think the important things are the attachments. There's a just a brief one-page summary on security for veterans DD-214s that came off of the National Association of County Veterans Service Officers website. And gives you just a brief view of that, and like there's like 30 to 34 states, I count 34 states on the next page, that have taken steps to provide additional confidentiality to the 214s. There are 9 states and Oregon is in that group that still maintain DD-214s as a public record. While this amendment is relatively simple, it would be great, and I don't know if you have time this session. I know time is short. Maybe some of the amendments will address it. But these other 34 states have really gone in and enumerated. As you can see, there's an attachment there, an appendix that shows what the other states have done. And they've really gone in and enumerated who has a right to access this information, how they can access it. So it really provides a great deal of clarity for those in charge of those records on what, when, and how. And the certainly Senate Bill 618 doesn't do that. It is now drafted. I'm certainly open to amendments that will clarify that. And I think with that, I will close my verbal testimony.
All right. Before we take any more testimony, Mr. Franke, if you'll listen to the testimony of some of the other proponents, Georgette Brown will be here for the Association of Counties Clerks, and I believe she is the requester of a Dash 2 amendment that does, in fact, put some limitations as to who can actually access them, since making certain family members and others will be able to have access without needing to go through a court procedure. So, but we'll see if you will be nodding once they give the testimony. And as I said, we're not moving anything today, and so if there's other clarifications we need to do, we'll have time to do that.
Be happy to, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Jim?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 618, which will exempt military discharge records from public records disclosure. I support this bill so long as the bill does not prohibit ODVA from conducting its normal course of business using these records. A veteran's military discharge record, most commonly referred to as the DD-214, is the most important document a veteran has. In fact, without this document, a veteran cannot receive federal or state veterans benefits, including health care, education, disability compensation, home loans, emergency grants, or survivor benefits. ODBA uses military discharge records daily to prove a veteran's eligibility for a variety of federal and state benefits. In our work, we share discharge records with our business partners, including the Federal Veterans Administration, the Veterans Health Administration, National Cemetery, County Veteran Service Officers, the veteran himself, widows, survivors, and dependents, and internally within our agency. Others also share these documents with ODVA, including the Department of Defense. As we read the bill, we do not believe that Senate Bill 618 will affect our daily business, nor do we think it will affect a veteran's ability to retrieve a copy of his or her own DD-214 from ODVA, the federal VA, or a county clerk's office where the veteran may have filed the document. As you know, a discharge record contains a veteran's name, date of birth, Social Security number, and other information that could be used maliciously if in the wrong hands. ODVA strongly believes in protecting our veterans' privacy and already has a policy of not sharing veteran information with the public at large. Senate Bill 618 codifies our current practice, which is why we support the bill. While not in my testimony, Senator Przanski and members of the committee, I'd like to point out that in addition to the items that I've indicated that are on the DD-214, there are also health-related items and findings of disability on some of these 214s, which is also protected information under federal law, and therefore should be equally protected under state law. Happy to thank the sponsors of this bill and for the committee for its favorable consideration. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. General?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director at the Military Department. Appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 618. I think all the points have been made. I'll just make a couple of obvious points that come to us on a daily basis. We are maintain a vast number of records of members who have been in the National Guard. Many of those are subsequently, after they leave active duty, come to the Guard, join the National Guard, and we keep those records mainly for several reasons. One, the St. Louis fire that occurred in the military records facility about 15, 20 years ago destroyed a good number of military records for all military members. We have constantly been asked by soldiers that served somewhere between the 1960s and the 1980s, about a 20, 25-year period, for copies of their records if they had been in the Guard. Many of those record requests are from family members because they can't generate these DD-214s or any other indication that they've been in the service, and that usually is done through us, ODVA, to try to get them benefits. The other interesting part of the military process is that every soldier is told when they discharge, make sure you take your 214 to your county clerk and get it registered, get it filed so you don't lose it. If you do lose it, then you have a place to go back to where your home or record was and retrieve that for future use and future benefits, particularly for veteran benefits. So every soldier is told and encouraged to do that, and as indicated before, now with the problems that we've had with identity theft, that has become an issue. Last point I would make is that we're going to, and I haven't seen the amendments, but I think that the military members and the veterans ought at least be afforded the same rights that the Oregon statute currently gives to those who have a sewer, water bill, or utility under the public utilities. And if we can do it for utility holders, we ought to be able to do it for veterans at a minimum. And that's all I'll say. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Questions? Senator Boquist.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Just for the record, I mean, Jim, Randy, the real issue, the 95% target here is the DD-214 in the clerk's office, right?
That's my interest, yes.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions or comments? Gentlemen, thank you very much. My next panel is going to be Georgette Brown, James Morales, Paul Snyder.
And members of the committee.
Good morning.
For the record, I'm Georgette Brown, retired Josephine County Clerk, and now representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks. I have to say, to begin with, in general, of course, the county clerks don't like to close any public records. But we are fine with 618 if our amendment can be included. Because the way we read the original 618, even the veteran would not be able to get a copy of it. So, if you'll bear with me just for a minute, I'll read you what we have in our amendment. Each county clerk who receives a request to inspect military veteran discharge papers that are recorded under ORS 408-420 shall produce the recorded discharge papers for inspection if the request for inspection is made in writing.
We have the amendment in front of us.
Oh, okay.
So let's just put by reference, you're talking about the dash twos?
Yes.
And you're talking about what's bold, highlighted, starting
yes.
line one, or line 17 on page one, continuing
yes.
on to
yes.
page two?
Yes.
I think that's good enough for the record.
Oh, okay. I won't
you.
Go through the whole thing. But may I just say that the request made by the military veteran, the spouse, the legal guardian, the person representative of the military veteran, or a county veteran service office, or a representative of the Department of Veteran Affairs would be able to get a copy.
That works great.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, since we got the amendment, we'll go through it. We're going to have to do some additional work. And before we talk about the dash twos, let's go ahead and get the other testimony. Then council has a point that we need to put on the record.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, James Morales, Benton County Clerk, on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. I just wanted to make a note that the amendment that we're bringing forward is in Chapter 408 of the ORS. Where that is exactly where the recording of the military discharge is authorized in statute. So it says, veteran record, and then it says, after recorded, this is how it's accessed. So we just put it all in one place where, and rather than going into chapter, what is it, 192 or something like that.
All right.
So that was part of our request. We just thought it was a lot clearer, a lot cleaner, and addressed exactly where the military portion is dealt.
All right, thank you. So basically it will be seamless because when you see how it's done, you also see how people can or can't access it.
And this is, it says it's free, it's a service provided by the counties to the veterans, and we intend to keep it that way.
All right, thank you. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and we're in agreement with the county clerk's position in the dash two amendments and Senate Bill 618 as amended.
All right, thank you. Council.
Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to address your attention to page two of the bill, lines 8 through 10. A county is not liable for accidental or erroneous disclosure of discharge information pursuant to request for the inspection of recorded discharge information. Chair, members of the committee, I want to pass out an opinion from Legislative Council's office as it relates to similar provisions in other bills that call into question the constitutionality of a provision like this. I just called Dave Hendricks and spoke to him about it. He wrote the opinion, and he thought it was problematic in the language. And if you read the opinion in the months since I read it, it basically could cause more problems than it solved.
All right, so I'm going to put a couple things on the record here. What Mr. Taylor has passed out to us is a legislative committee opinion that came from Dave Hendricks, dated February 16, 2009. This is in regards to what is Senate Bill 311 that just passed, which is modifying the Oregon Tort Claims Act. And there was some discussion as to who could be held liable for different acts as to an employee versus a public body. So do you want to put anything else on the record?
Chair, members of the committee, that's just an opinion.
All right, and so what did Mr. Hendricks, or did he have any words of wisdom for us regarding what should or shouldn't be done to accommodate the concerns that were raised by the opinion that he's produced on the 16th of February?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in another bill, which I actually have up this afternoon in the House, he did have some language which basically said that this bill doesn't create any liability. In itself, I guess we could use language similar to that. I don't have it with me
Let me do this. First of all, we're not going to move anything today because we don't have all the paperwork to do it in the first place. Second, and it sounds to me that maybe there needs to be what would be considered an additional amendment. Let's call it a dash three, or whatever's next in line that may address some of the concerns that council has brought up and still keep the integrity that's in the dash twos as to what the procedure is for who would be able to access these papers and making certain we cover that. So, Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. And I'm not sure to whom my question is addressed, whether it's to the panel or to our committee counsel. The dash two amendments take the original provisions of the bill under Chapter 192 and delete them and replace them with this amendment. So I'm trying to figure out where's the language that actually makes the information confidential if it's not in Chapter 192. Where does that confidentiality protection, which I think we need to support the protection of the Social Security number, driver's license, health information, but if it's not an exemption from public records and it's in now going to be in Chapter 408, what is it that makes it protected?
Committee Senator Bonamici, I don't know. I'm like you. I'm just reading the dash two amendments for the first time. I probably read them 15 minutes before you did.
So that's one of the reasons we won't be doing anything on the bill today.
Does somebody have an answer to that on the panel?
Well, it provides in section two, the one I didn't read the whole section two to you, but one of the provisions is the one that I did read, that the request would have to be made by the military veteran, the spouse, the military department, and that. So that's part of
it. I understand that. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I understand that that's who can request the information, but if it's otherwise considered a public record, then I'm not clear on where do we get the protection that we need if it's moved out of Chapter 192. This is my only concern.
You may.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Bonamici. The section in which the recording of the discharge paper initially, I do not believe that it ever identifies it as being a public record. It's a record that we hold in the county clerk's office. And then our amendment, what we're seeking to do is to define who would have access to that record. So it's a record. Doesn't say it's a public record. It's a repository for the benefit of the veterans. And we have always made it available because there was no definition of who had access. But my understanding is it doesn't say that it's public in the current statute.
I think we need clarification on that.
Why don't we let council respond?
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I think Senator Bonamici has a point. Quickly reading the amendment, it takes everything out of the bill except the emergency clause.
Right.
And the provision that's being amended is a public records provision of, was it 192.502? So I'm not sure what.
Well, this is demonstrates why it's important to have the amendments to council before, so we can have a different set of eyes review it and prep it for whatever might need to be done. So we understand the intent of what the dash twos are. It sounds to me that the intent of the dash twos can't be carried out unless we do some modifications as to making certain that we are in fact protecting the record. And I understand from the clerk's position, this is not, at least has been interpreted by the clerks to be an outright public record, but it seems like the statutes may have considered it a public record for certain purposes. So we'll need to get legislative counsel to assist making certain that we cover the intent and whatever has been the historical perspective of what these records actually are, and making certain that we do give the protections that is requested by the proponents if we're moving forward in that direction, and making certain there still can be access by the different people. Boquist.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. Council may want to look into it because I believe it, in fact, under federal law, is not a public record. It is protected under the federal law. And the catch-22 here is if you lose it, you're out. And that's why the clerks in virtually every state, you go to the clerk's office and register it. The federal government recognizes a certified copy from the clerk's office going backwards. And so we're taking a non-federal public record, a non public record, and then kind of sticking it in the clerk's office out of courtesy for the last 100 years. And people go in now, the problem is, and start fishing through the deal. And I can see the clerk's problem also is that there are hundreds of these registered through thousands and tens of thousands of pages. And if somebody goes in there and starts, you know, looking for something, says they're looking for something else and finds this, then the clerk, you know, has done due diligence but has had.
And I think that's what Mr. Morales is saying, is that the clerks in the state, through whatever process, became the depository for these records, as you're saying, Senator, I guess for safekeeping,
right,
and having the ability for them to be able to get a certified copy that would be true and correct. But as we also know, while those records are within the depository, there's no framework to keep them from being observed or viewed or information taken off of them by anybody else that's in the clerk's office.
That's right, Mr. Chair. Basically, all we're doing is slowing down the process or making it more difficult.
Right.
In all the best of days.
Any other questions or comments on this? All right, so what we're going to do is I'll have counsel work with the clerk's offices for the state, as well as the Veterans Affairs and others, as to, don't worry, you're going to get to testify. As to what we might be changing in this. So that's, just want to give a framework there. All right, so with that, thank you very much.
Thank
and
you.
Then the last two people I have to testify on this is Andrea Meyer and, let's see, and Tom Gallagher. Oh, down in the bottom, scribbled in there. Tom?
Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I'm going to be very quick because I need to run out of this room to another room. And Senator Bonamici, you raised one of the concerns that we had, which was, I think we saw with the autopsy reports in the previous bill, where there was the reason that the autopsy reports were being addressed in the public records was that fact that although they were accessible to certain family members, the court had held that that did not exclude them from being part of the public record. So I think you do have that component to deal with, and so may not solve the problem that's being brought forward to you simply by moving it all into 4.408. I would urge that if you were to look to putting it into the exemptions of the public records, as I said in the autopsy reports, you consider putting it in 0.501 rather than 502. The difference between those two sections is 502 is an outright prohibition. The 501 provides that the records are exempt unless the public interest requires disclosure in the particular instance. In looking at some minutes or some documents from Washington State's Veterans Working Group, they talked about the integrity of the public records is essential for the establishment of ancestral ties that may be of interest to this and future generations. And so the concern I would have would be that while we certainly want to protect against identity theft and the Social Security number, we also may want to make these available when the public interest in those rare circumstances, particularly family members or ancestral family members, requires it. And I'm not sure that with the language in the dash twos, the family member would get there if they didn't know the last four digits of the Social Security number and other criteria. So I hope you, as you move forward and recognizing the needs for maybe some relief for family members, that there's a way to do it that doesn't make it so prohibitive on them to really be able to get it. And I hope if I can answer any questions or then be excused. I'd love to listen to Tom, but I need to run if there's
any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Happy running. All right, Tom.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Gallagher, representing the Oregon Newspaper Publishers. Let me start by saying I'm glad to see this concern for veterans. When I separated from the Army in Oakland Army Terminal, they actually advised me not to wear my uniform on the airplane in 1969, that it was not the best of times to advertise where you'd been. So I'm glad to see the change. I have a couple of comments. The first one is quite specifically in terms of putting this in 408. If you look at section 191.502 sub 9, I believe, it's either 9 or 6, it says that any record that's exempt in any other part of the statute is exempt under the Public Records Act. So it's what we call bootstrapped into the Public Records Act by that particular function. I actually kind of generally prefer in this case that it might stay in 408. That makes some sense to me for a number of different reasons. The two issues I want to raise are general to public records, not about this one specifically. If we use identity theft as the reason to exclude public records from the public, there is no longer a line, because identity theft occurs in all different ways across a segment and would occur to anybody whose names, address, and other issues are held in sort of a public record. So I'm always worried when we come in and say the reason to exempt this is because of possible identity theft. I have no idea what record couldn't be excluded under that criteria. The second thing that kind of concerns me is, and I heard it on the House side on the concealed weapons permit, and I just heard it here from the Department of Veterans Affairs, that the agency has a policy of not sharing various wreckage with the public at large. I don't think that's legal. I think that the only way the public can refuse to turn over a record is if exempt under the public records section 191, 501, or 502. And this is the second case where we have agencies making decisions about that. If I look on the second page of the amendment, it says on line 11, each county clerk may adopt additional policies to protect the discharge records from malicious use or policies regarding copying of discharge records. Again, I think that's a delegation of some authority on what public records needs to be released. And I'm concerned about that. I think all of us are concerned about that. The third thing I want to raise for you is the new policy of allowing some folks to get records, some people to get records, and others not to. There's been a long tradition of exempting public records or allowing the judiciary, law enforcement, other people to get into records, like, you know, specific juvenile records, arrest records, sharing of information, and so forth. I always thought that was appropriate because that record was being exempted from the general public, and except for purposes of public safety. Those were the only other people that could get into it. We're now starting to talk about other special groups that may have access to records. We had a bill in the House that would allow insurance companies and researchers. And so pretty soon we're going to start down the line of saying, okay, who has some legitimate right here? So maybe we can just turn the public records over in a sense, and I'm suggesting that you do that, but if you flip it over and say, okay, we have public records, but who has a right to get them? That's really the issue here. So the whole concept that newspapers really care about are the access of the public to these general public records. It's not the issue of veterans. I mean, veterans discharge papers, that's kind of a no-brainer. I do like the fact that it's in Section 408. I like the fact that after the third time this bill has come forward, you're probably going to move on it. This is not what I would consider to be a public record that anybody would have a legitimate right to. So I just ask your consideration on looking at those other finer issues that you're about to delve into in the Public Records Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Tom? Thank you for your clarification and the testimony. All right, so anyone else who wanted to give testimony on Senate Bill 618? Not seeing anybody. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. And Senator Boquist, would you be willing to work with individuals and council, making sure that we, let's say, clean up what needs to be cleaned up? And the intent of the chair is to make certain that those type of records are not going to be open to the general public. All right, with that, we're going to go ahead and...
30. Could you ask them to hang around?
I think council wants to meet with Senator Boquist and all that. So if y'all could just hang on, we're going to be finished in about 5 minutes.
Work group is in 5 minutes.
Yeah, work group begins in 5 minutes. We're here. We're efficient. It's Monday.
That's right.
All right. So, Council, which of the two is ready to go?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 389, which comes to you from the Committee on the Judiciary. You have the dash of amendments in front of you. Clarifies, this is repeals 137.721-1, which is from the Council on Greg Prince's shop, and this is a bill that Josh Nashby pointed out that as it relates to Measure 57, that there is a conflict between the statute and Measure 57, and since Measure 57 was last in time, it's first in right, and this relates to repeat property offenders and sentencing, and this would clarify that it removed the now repealed provisions from the books.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and open the work session on Senate Bill 389 and adopt by incorporation the statements that council just gave us into Senate Bill 389. So my understanding, based on that information, is that we have a dash one that needs to be adopted. What we're looking at is basically setting up a system that will keep us from being in conflict because of what was passed through ballot measure 57 and what was existing state statute. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
All right, so the chair would take a motion on the dash one amendments.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rehnquist moves the dash ones into Senate Bill 389. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Is there fiscal?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have the revenue and fiscal. There's none.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 389 as amended by the dash one to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 389 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. The chair will carry this one as well. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 389. And then that leaves us with Senate Bill.
Chairman's Committee, Senate Bill 265.
Hang on 1 second. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 265.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I'm getting ahead of myself.
That's quite all right.
Mr. Chairman of the Committee allows the presiding judge of the circuit court to establish a mental health court. You remember Judge Grace testified, among others, on behalf of this bill. And I believe Walt Beglow is in the audience, and he also testified on behalf of the bill. You have the dash one amendments before you, which are the work product of suggestions of Mr. Beglow and Judge Graves.
All right. And Walt, you're here. Is there any comments you want to put on the record regarding the dash ones?
Madam Chair, just briefly.
All right.
Had a chance to look at these. I think this allows the court to retain all the tools that they need. It makes a comment about the diversionary piece for district attorneys, and those were the main pieces to this. And the key point here that I wanted to make sure is that we're hearing from the courts and the parties is that they retain that local flavor, that local capacity to tailor the programs the way they need to do it. So the way it stands right now looks good, and just want to get back in front of the committee.
All right, great. Thank you. So, colleagues, since we don't have all the paperwork, the desire of the chair at this point would be to go ahead and adopt the dash ones, and then we'll just carry that over till later this week and see if the fiscals catch up with us.
Mr. Chair, move the dash ones into 265.
Senator Boquist moves the Senate bill, the dash ones into Senate Bill 265. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And this one to say that we'll have a subsequent.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So once we get the fiscal and everything, instead of going to the floor, it'll be with a motion to Ways and Means on a subsequent referral. And so with that, that's going to close the work session on Senate Bill 265. And do we have anything else?
Chairman, is it May? That's it.
All right. And Courtney, regarding tomorrow, is our start time 8 o'clock? All right, so we're going into the earlier time frame to make certain we have enough time to carry and take care of whatever bills we have. So we'll see everyone starting at 8 tomorrow, and then we'll on the 265, we'll go ahead and carry that one over until
Thursday
of this week, which would be, must be the 16th, if I'm not mistaken. Day after tax day, a good day to do it. And with that, we're adjourned.